Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to this week's Failed Critics podcast. I'm the host, Steve Norman. I'm joined by Owen Hughes.
Hello.
Callum Petch.
Hello.
And Andrew Brooker.
Evening, gents.
As we take a look at the last week or so in film, finalising the podcast with a review of War of the Planet of the Apes.
Film. War for the Planet of the Apes, I think.
War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
that former planet of the et cetera.
Yeah. Planet Monkey Fight.
Monkey yeah. Planet Returns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chimp Rampage.
Rampage?
They're actually making a Rampage film, so...
Are they?
Yeah. They're actually finally making The Rock and everything, because The Rock apparently now needs to be in all films by law.
Just give it a rest, Dwayne.
Apparently, Alexandra Daddario will be having a cameo appearance as well, probably tying it into the San Andreas universe.
They're making a San Andreas sequel.
Oh, God, they actually are.
Oh, they are.
Whilst I was at the cinema today, I saw a poster for Annabelle Creation that said, "The next chapter in the Conjuring universe."
Yep, the Conjuring universe is now a thing.
Jeez, could just stop, Warner Brothers, just stop.
You know, I've not seen a single one of those films yet.
I mean, of course, really? I am. I'm a baby.
Really?
So.
I don't know how, considering how much I love all things horror, I seem to have missed all the Conjuring, Annabelle, everythings. So I've got them all waiting to watch. Yeah. Just in time for Creation.
I was going to say, I think the two Conjuring movies are actually on Netflix.
They are very good films as well.
And yeah. Annabelle's on Prime.
Annabelle, I watched last week and was utter fucking horse shit.
Well, I mean, on one hand, it's not by James Wan. That's probably the first problem.
Do you find dolls creepy, Brooker? Are dolls, are they really creepy?
Are you going to be creeped out?
Then you'll probably like it, because that is literally all it is.
Brooker, are you scared of little girls? Are you scared of little girls as well? Because, Annabelle Creation is probably going to be right up your street, then, if you're utterly terrified of little children.
I have my own little girl that scares the shit out of me, so yes.
These are things that have never been done in horror movies before. This is brand new stuff that we needed to get the origin stories to.
Okay, so better or worse than The Boy?
Oh. The Boy was worse, I would say. Annabelle is at least kind of well made for what it is. But, like, literally the only thing that's any good in Annabelle is the scene that was in the trailer. You know, the scene where it's a little girl runs at a door, flings the door open, and it's, that is it. That's the only bit that's in the film that's like, that was good.
To be fair,
you've seen it a million times.
The only thing that's got me excited even slightly about watching all of these films is the fact that David Sandberg is making Creation, the guy that made Lights Out, and I fucking loved Lights Out.
Is this like how the guy did Ouija, who did that Ouija sequel as well, also made something else that was really good? Was that Hush?
I think it was, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. Also, I love the fact this is probably the first time in like a year and a half that anybody has thought of a boy. Just
because I kind of know it's Owen's benchmark for really shit horror. Yeah.
But
like...
To be fair, it's my benchmark for really shit horror as well.
The only other thing I wanted to say about Annabelle, this isn't like what we've gone straight into what we've been watching weirdly, but like, I was going to say, can we stop making Annabelle Wallace a thing? Can we just stop trying to force that now? with the mummy.
Oh, yeah. King Arthur. Oh, yeah. The guy did Annabelle actually has made a new PG-13 horror movie as well that came out in America this weekend. And apparently, it's like Final Destination, but shit.
There's an advert, literally, as we were talking, an advert for Annabelle Creation just turned up on my TV. That doll looks like Chucky's kid in drag in Seed of Chucky.
Yes. Seed of Chucky.
It looks like the it looks like the Seed of Chucky when he dresses up in drag. If you haven't seen Seed of Chucky, Google Seed of Chucky and check out the kid when he dresses in drag. It looks just like that fucking doll.
I will add watching the Chucky movies alongside the same day that I decide to try Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I decide, because the other day I sat, like the other day, this is also skipping out to what we've been watching already, but fuck it.
it's a shambles this week.
Yeah, like sorry. I sat down with my friend Lucy and watched Kill List Alien. Was going to watch a third horror movie, but issues meant we couldn't. I'm out there. But we did a horror movie, and I just sort of realised, you know, at some point we should sit down together and you should introduce me to shitty 80s horror movies. Well, not shitty.
Nobody said shitty.
Yeah, well, you know, like class, you know, like the kind of ones that have become like slasher movie kind of staples and that there that kind of turned cheesy as it went on and that there. Just like, just sit down for a day and just watch it. Mainly because I keep, you know, like, seeing stuff about that Friday the 13th game and thinking, you know what, I've never actually watched a Friday the 13th movie. This could be fun. I should get into that at some point.
I would enjoy listening to anything you have to say about the Friday the 13th franchise. I've literally just binged them from start to finish.
I hear that they start actually good, then turn naff, and then turn naff. Isn't like the good kind of nap.
Well, yeah, but this is it. We're towards the end, like 9 and 10 are 10 and Freddy vs. Jason are fucking terrible, but so, so good.
My favourite kind of cheap horror movie. the ones that have fun and recognise that they're being, you're like, you know, so, yeah. Anyway, so
let's still have like a quiz and yeah, news.
Let's do the quiz then, where it's 2-2, Owen's hosting, and it's me versus
Brooker.
Yeah, just me, apparently.
Brooker, yeah, just Steve versus the world.
Yeah.
It's probably easy. I mean, I could just stand on the sidelines going, yay, go Brooker, or yay, go Steve, just as things go on.
Well, I do kind of apologise in advance, because this is probably the shittest quiz I've put together in a good while. I thought, what's the easiest, but could be the most fun quiz that I could put together? And based on the radio show I did this morning, Front Row with Paul Rutland, and he had a quiz on that which was about Google. I thought I'd rip him off, just do the same or similar kind of thing.
No imagination at all, just my mate did it this morning, I'm gonna do it tonight.
Yeah, I could put that together in about 15 minutes. That's good.
He's not on the podcast with me, you'll never know.
Yeah, I didn't use the same quiz. I'll say I've changed it up a little bit, but basically, do you guys know Google Feud?
Yes.
No. Okay. It's a web game based on where, you know, you start typing something into Google and it kind of auto completes what you're looking for.
Have you nicked this from two friends I used to know at university who did the exact same game on their radio show, only they called it auto incorrect?
Oh, right. No, I haven't. But
which it arguably, would be
weird if I had, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, arguably that's a better name. Rutland has.
Yeah, it is a better name because Google Feud is a bit shit.
Yeah, and the rip-off cycle continues.
It does. So, basically, right, on Google Feud, you select one of four categories. You've got culture, people, names or questions, and you have to then guess the top 10 autocompletes in Google searches for the question that it partially asks. I want you to guess as many of the top 10 autocompletes as you can. And I'm going to put you, Steve, against Brooker and Callum, and Steve can go first, I think, because it's only fair. We've got three rounds. You get three opportunities each, after which point I'll move on to the next question. Right, okay, round one. I want you to guess the top 10 autocompletes for the question, has a person ever been ... So, Steve, you get to guess first. Has a person ever been...
What's this got to do with film?
Nothing at all to do with film.
Absolutely nothing.
Zero film-related relevance.
Right. At least we'll be honest about this week.
So, has a person ever been...
Has a person ever been to Mars?
Bing. First one to Steve. That's the sound effect.
That's the most lifeless ding I've ever
heard. Bing. Right. Callum Brooker, has a person ever been?
I wouldn't even know where to begin.
To Mars was the second highest answer on the list, by the way.
See, I'm leaving this to you first, and I'll try one next time.
Okay. Oh, thanks.
It's not democracy here, Brooker. We take turns.
I'll stick with Steve's space-based theme and say to the moon.
Ooh. No, it's not on there.
No?
Was that your eh-eh?
Thing and then ooh.
like a guy trying to balance on a beam about to slip off. Ooh.
Ooh. Steve, has a person ever been
forward in time?
Ooh. Oh. Right. Callum Brooker, has a person ever been?
Has a person ever been to the afterlife?
Ooh. No. Two down. Steve is currently 1 point. So, Steve, has a person ever been
back in time?
No.
That's what, basically the exact same answer.
What, born in time? No,
or no, that's not an answer.
No, that's not an answer. And probably no, they haven't.
No, they haven't. No.
I mean, everybody goes forward in time all the time, but nobody's ever been backwards in time.
What about Unless Back to the Future?
Back to the Future. That documentary.
Documentary.
I suppose you could count, like, literally going backwards through time zones.
Should we just get on with this?
Anyway, so, yes, Callum, Brooker, I should say, I think you're answering this time, right? Okay. Has a person ever been
eaten by a tiger?
You were so fucking close with that one. No.
What do you mean? Get it? Can we just get it, please?
What do you mean so close? What was the answer?
Has a person ever been eaten by a shark, eaten by a snake, or swallowed by a whale? Were three of the options.
Oh, come on.
I like how it's not swallowed by a snake here as well. It's specifically eaten.
Yep. Great. Eaten by a snake, eaten by a shark, or swallowed by a whale.
All right, so Steve wins that round then.
Steve wins that round. So has a person ever been shipped, lost in space, in a black hole, cloned, born with a tail, or mailed? Mailed was the top answer.
Mail, as in
posted.
There are a lot of people who want to get involved in human trafficking here, aren't there?
Yeah.
Like Tesco values human trafficking as well.
Yeah. So Steve's currently got 1 point, and round two, is it bad to... ... Steve, you go first again. So, is it bad to
have romantic thoughts about a family member?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Steve, it is bad, but that's not on the list, no.
It's only similar on the list.
Ish.
You're really trying hard not to cheat, not to give us clues here, aren't you?
There's right. No sleeping with family members on there. No, that's not.
Is it wrong to cheat on your partner?
No, that's not on there either. Nope. So, Steve,
Is it bad to trick somebody?
Is that it? Just trick somebody.
Trick yeah. Someone.
That's it.
Well, unsurprisingly, no, that isn't on one of, that's not one of the most Googled terms. Callum Brooker, is it bad to
send unsolicited dick pics? Steve.
I've never sent them unsolicited, and this is a fact.
Well, that is incorrect as well. All of them. Whatever.
Are you looking for exact phrasing here, or are you willing to give us in the ballpark?
The ballpark.
No, that's not in the ballpark.
Every time I try and get a website, I check movies. The first thing that always pops up on the other thing is I cheated on my girlfriend. For some reason, that's always the first thing that comes up as I'm typing I check movies, which is...
But, okay. So, whose go is it? Who's round it?
Steve.
Is it bad too?
Not eat healthily.
What?
Is it bad to not eat healthily? Is not on the list.
I'm trying to think what idiots would type into the internet.
You're doing a good job.
Great things about our audience like that, Steve.
Who's winning at the moment?
You've got 1 point.
Well, there you go.
1 point. Callum, Brooker, is it bad to?
Is it bad to kill a man?
That's not on there either. No.
Okay. Sorry, okay. Brooker. I'm trying to think like Steve here. I'm trying to think like Steve.
Is it bad to not let a man live? No. Okay. We've got, is it bad to shave your arms? Is it bad to eat ice? Sleep on your side? Close a credit card? Run in the cold? I don't know what that's about.
These are all weirdly mundane.
Have sex.
Sleep on your side.
Sleep on your side. Is it bad to sleep on your side? Is it bad to have sex every day? Is it bad to
who the fuck is
teeth?
Asking that?
Somebody who's never had sex before, I'm guaranteeing.
Imagine being so worried for your health that you're having sex every day and now it scares you.
Depends if it's with.
Depends what kind of sex.
If it is with a relative, then probably isn't bad. Is it bad to hold your pee? Is it bad to crack your neck? Is it bad to swallow gum? And the top answer, the most searched for, is it bad to sleep with socks on?
What?
People. Fucking people.
Right. Who sleeps with socks on?
This quiz is basically just me, like, trying to talk like family members and that bit, like when they're drunk in the evening that bit, just have rounded conversations about nonsense over and over and over again that you never get
Even
out
when
of.
It's like the coldest weather ever, I don't sleep with socks on.
What mad...
Well, do you wear pyjamas at all? Are you a nudie, sleep in a buff kind of guy?
I sleep in my boxer shorts,
this
Owen.
This is already far too much information, please, Owen. Move on to the next question.
The question. It's the final round.
So we could tie and make both of you watch terrible films.
No, because, well, Steve is currently ahead, but you suppose you could tie. I haven't got a tie break. We will come to that. Can you milk a... ...
What?
And Steve... Can you milk a
rat?
No, that's not one of the answers. Not a rat. Callum Brooker, can you milk a
sheep?
Is an answer. Yes.
Oh, shit. It's on.
It's tying at the moment. Okay. Steve, can you milk a
man?
Is the top answer.
For fuck's sake.
Of course it is.
Steve is now 2-1. Okay, Callum Brooker, can you milk a...
Oh, guys, it's all on me now, isn't it?
Can you
milk a cat?
He's on there, yes!
Oh!
That's third on the list. Steve, if you get this point, you've won.
I'm going to say dog.
He's not on the list!
Oh
my God.
So let's go... Jackass, and can you milk a horse?
He's on there.
We won.
Fucking what, you beauties?
Which means, according to this agenda that I have here, that stated you were 2-2 before this episode. That means Owen now goes 3-2 and he wins.
Oh, it's won! Yes, that was the comeback for the ages. Considering I was 2-0 down at one point. Oh, you guys, I fucking love you. Yes,
I like you too, Owen. What are you making Steve watch, man?
Is going to watch Dangerous Game.
Easy.
Which is a film that Paul Field recently reviewed in The Independent, when in The Independent, the worst football film ever made, he says. Worse than United Passions.
Oh.
Yes.
It will not be worse than Goal 3.
It apparently stars Callum Best.
Yeah, Callum Best is in the...
Dangerous Game is a supposed... This isn't the actual IMDb description here. Is a supposed action-packed British heist movie. When Chris, Callum Best, gets mixed up with the Russian mafia and Algerian gangsters while trying to help his best friend pay off a large debt, he has to decide if he puts his career on the rocks by embarking on a spree of dangerous robberies that could end up with him in prison or possibly dead.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that the official plot description here says supposed.
Oh, God. Yes. I would recommend people check out Paul's review. There's a link to it on our website, valcritics.com. But yes, Steve, you're going to have to report back on your own opinion of Dangerous Game for us. Easy. I want to know how Callum Best does as a mid-table Premier League striker earning £5,000 a week, which is ridiculous, gets into gambling debts. And I want to know how Darren Day is as a Russian mobster.
Mm.
So, fill us in.
Please don't blacklist
next week.
Mm. Yeah. Please don't blacklist us from appearing on this podcast, Steve. It wasn't our fault.
Yeah. On to the news, and there's been a couple.
Are we only on the news? God damn it!
Shit. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we needed to have some fun before things get sad, because this is actually quite sad news this week.
So the first thing we're going to talk about is Doctor Who is now a bloody woman. There's going to be tampons all over the TARDIS, and she's not going to be able to decide which planet she wants to go to. And it's just going to be rubbish.
Not going to be able to park the bloody thing right.
Bloody women ruining everything for everyone.
Hang on, guys. I do believe that is this podcast's 1 millionth ironic sexism joke. We did it, everybody. Hey. We did it.
We made it.
Round of applause.
I'm just glad we were able to clarify what gender the or sex the new doctor is, because, you know, I haven't really heard anything about it. I mean, it hasn't just been every other tweet on Twitter for the past couple of days. So I'm really...
They've not even picked a very good-looking one, have they?
What's that, 1,000,001?
Goodbye. Goodbye, all of our female listeners. It was nice knowing you.
Yeah. No, I mean, okay, yeah, great. It's progressive. That's good. They've gone for... something different. And from what I gather, I don't watch Doctor Who, so I don't really care who they cast as Doctor Who anymore. From what I gather, they kind of needed to do something different anyway, because the show was flagging. And so actually, it seems like it could be a really good and smart, clever move, not just a pandering to women kind of
thing. I just don't care. I watch Doctor Who and I quite enjoy Doctor Who. It's a decent light entertainment sci-fi program. It's fun. I think all the doctors we've had since the reboot in 2005 have been good. I think some of the episodes in the series and the writers haven't been as good. Some of the doctors, especially Peter Capaldi, perhaps hasn't had the stories that he did, you know, the plots that he deserved.
Stephen Moffat.
But I just don't really care who plays the Doctor, as long as they do a good job of it. It's quite, I know it's a point that everyone's been hammering home, but people getting all bent out of shape about it because it's Doctor Who's always been a man. It's a fucking alien that's 900 years old and travels through time.
Steve, just you wait until they inevitably eventually make James Bond a woman. That will be the day when it'll just be scorched earth everywhere. It'll be impossible to go along.
It's slightly different in, you know.
There are obvious differences about that. I'm just like mentioning that there. I mean, this kind of uproar will happen over literally anything nowadays. Yeah,
we've had similar things happen. So we've had obviously a lot of talk about somebody like Idris Elba playing James Bond. James Bond in the books and in the literature has a pretty firm description as a white guy.
Idris Elba play James Bond though?
He could be the next Bond.
I'm sure he did it in like an audio book or something.
Well, it's bad, but I think also the thing is that, like, I mean, I guess if you need that thing for Bond, I mean, Bond should be, but is of course he's meant to be the personification of the British male id, so it kind of has to be like a white, slightly misogynist looking, you know, like British guy in that bit.
Manchester United tattoo.
Yeah, again, I'm saying all these, somebody who actually quite likes some Bond films, by the way, so don't get on me about it. It's in the same way that, you know, when Lady Ghostbusters came around about that, in the end, the gender means squat if the stories don't mesh up. And with Moffat going out the window, who, again, I don't want, I'm speaking basically out my arse here out there, because I don't watch Doctor Who, but I did sit through 3 series of Sherlock. like maybe that means that suddenly Doctor Who will actually gain the turnaround it needs. And it won't just be because it's a woman. It might be because somebody with talent is now writing those scripts.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's like Moffat can do talent. It's just that he finds himself too often up his own arse because he like ejaculates too much over needlessly complex lore and that there and stories that are clever for the sake of being clever.
Should we name the woman?
Yeah, we probably should actually. It's kind of bad. Yeah.
It's Jodie Whittaker who's been cast. Do we know her from anything? I mean, I've seen her in a couple of things, but
she's in Brooker, Broadchurch, apparently. But also, that name's ringing a bell. So hang on.
She was in Attack the Block.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Mm. And Joe Cornish is going to make another film.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and she was in the entire History of You episode of Black Mirror as well.
Yes. She was in Black Mirror. She was in Black Sea as well, which was a pretty
good. Oh yeah, that was good.
What was Black Sea? Was that the
Jude Law submarine? Ben Mendelsohn. Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, and also she was in Get Santa, but I imagine she would like to forget that she was in Get Santa.
As I suppose most people who've seen it would.
Jim Broadbent probably drinks every Christmas to forget he was in Get Santa.
But I think they've not gone for a particularly household name for the Doctor. Like, exactly. Most people would have recognised Peter Capaldi over Jodie Whittaker, for example. But, it's kind of brave, I guess. It's what Doctor Who's done in the past, though, isn't it? You know, Matt Smith was not exactly a particularly well-known name. David Tennant wasn't that well-known at that point either. I think the only thing I'd seen him in before Doctor Who was Casanova. So, I mean, it was kind of like...
Oh, and you're making me sigh and sad with David Tennant's Hollywood career never took off. He deserves more.
Well, he's great in Fright Night. Fright Night is still good in.
Yeah, I've heard Fright Night is good. Also, again, this also frees Peter Capaldi up to go star in World War Z 2. If you mean in the first Doctor. World War Z, I never watched it because fucking zombies. Am I right?
You leave World War Z alone. World War Z was fun.
Okay, fair enough. But speaking of fucking zombies...
Yeah, that was a nice segue that wasn't picked up.
Hang on. I just wanted to say that most sane people wanted Danny Dyer to be the next Doctor Who.
No, they didn't.
Segueing into the news nicely from Callum's last comment is that obviously the sad news is that George A. Romero passed away this week. The kind of... father of zombie horror.
I wrote a piece for the website about George A. Romero because he's one of my favorite filmmakers. I'm sitting here now with this podcast and there's a framed poster of Dawn of the Dead right in front of me. Night of the Living Dead is one of my favorite films. One of the few films I've given a full 5 stars to on Letterboxd. I mean, it's the perfect horror film, Night of the Living Dead, and Dawn of the Dead 2, and Day of the Dead. All three of those that trilogy are exceptional genre movies. Not even for the fact like how revolutionary Night of the Living Dead accidentally was. You know, he didn't set out to completely regenerate a whole... unused or underused creature from the horror genre. He just thought, well, we'll just make the dead people come back from the graves. We'll set it in a graveyard. It's kind of creepy. In fact, the whole thing about like Night of the Living Dead was John Russo and George A. Romero. He didn't even want to make horror films. He wanted to make a movie that would make a profit so he could make rom-coms. That's what his passion was at the time, 1968. And he did. He made a rom-com and it was, I haven't watched it, but by all accounts, awful. and he kind of realised that maybe he should turn his hand to the thing he was actually quite good at. And we're so glad he did, because Dawn of the Dead, 1978, Day of the Dead, 1985. And Brooker on Twitter earlier, we were having this conversation. It's not really a Living Dead trilogy.
No, I get really uppity with fans that call it a trilogy.
Because of Land of the Dead, Survival of the Dead.
Yeah. I mean, even if you don't, because, like you say, we were talking about it, so Diary of the Dead is... it's all right.
I like Diary of the Dead.
But Land of the Dead is a fucking masterpiece. I fucking love Land of the Dead.
Land of the Dead was one of the films that my brother bought from a closing down Blockbuster on DVD for like a quid once and that there. He really liked it.
It's good. It's good. Yeah. It's the film. It's closer to the film that he wanted to make with Dawn of the Dead. Day of the Dead. He was always annoyed that his ideas for Day of the Dead were restricted by the budget. I think he wanted like $9 million to make Day of the Dead. And in the end, like all they could were given by the studio was $3.5 million. So he had to tone down everything about it. But if you watch them together, Land of the Dead, it does take all the themes about how the zombies are getting more intelligent, and it's actually the supposedly quote unquote intelligent people or society that are getting dumber. Which, you know, again, because it's all about allegories. That's all the Romero films were about.
Yeah.
Zombies aren't just the undead. They're a message for something. Night of the Living Dead, returning Vietnam War soldiers. You know?
Yeah, like I saw a tweet from Jordan Peele as well after passing that there, where he just pointed out to Night of the Living Dead as like one of the progenitors of Get Out and that kind of like social horror. Well, like that kind
and
of.
And also because of Dwayne Jones, who's the African American central character who they didn't even think about when they cast him that his colour would ever be an issue. It's just like, he's a good actor, we know him. He can play.
Except, like that thing, that idea as well, get the fact that they cast him not to give the colour, but then inadvertently make him one of the most powerful like race at the end of the film as a result of it as well. It's just excellent.
Yeah, it's a really sort of clever twist. I mean, even like I said it in the piece as well on the website, that there's a scene in it where, you know, Barbara, she's getting a bit hysterical, and he just gives her a bit of a slap. And you don't think anything of it these days. You think, oh well, it's a bit weird, you know, slapping women, it doesn't look right. But actually what you miss is the context of, this is a black guy in America in 1968 slapping a white woman. I mean, even that has much bigger implications. But even away from all that, even away from all that context, and the social commentary and all, at the heart of it is just a great.
He's just an excellent director. Like he was in Playboy. He's just an excellent director of horror as well, Matt. There all the way through to the end. It's just the kind of films that you can kind of absorb. But it's one of those rare films I feel like that is, of course, like so foundation of pop culture and of a whole like genre that you can kind of absorb by osmosis. But even by the time you get around to actually watching them, you don't watch it. There's still like the actual power in there. But like years of exposure of what, like for example, like as a random example, like I spent years, I didn't watch Ghostbusters for the first time until I was like 16, and therefore I spent so much life effectively having lived it. By the time I watched it, it didn't really have that specialty. But like watching, and not just because I actually saw, you know, like Dawn of the Dead relatively young Matt there as well, but like watch it, like even if you're already aware of all the bits it's homage to Matt Bay, you know, for like other films and blatantly Shaun of the Dead and all that, and that there, instead of just watch it, you still get that raw visceral power from having seen it Matt there, like the classic movies and that there. It's just a damn shame, like with Wes Craven, just fuck cancer, man.
Just, yeah, 77 lung cancer. It was a short battle as well, apparently, was what I read earlier. But he died. I read this. This is quite nice. So he had the score for The Quiet Man on when he was dying. He put it on, and it was the thing he was listening to, the John Wayne film, which is an awesome film and an awesome score. So went out in style, went out in class.
It's a bit fucking bleak, isn't it? Fucking hell.
Time for what we've been watching, where we have a look at some of the films we've seen in the last week or so. Callum, why don't you start us off?
I finally watched Kill List.
Yes.
Which long-time listeners of the podcast might have heard that I said I was going to watch at back after I saw the London Film Festival last October for Halloween. It didn't happen, but I did buy it on Blu-ray whilst I was in London, because my friend Lucy said she wanted to watch it with me and that there, so we were going to make a thing out of an event, and then it just kept getting pushed back and back and back. But I did it last Wednesday. I sat and I watched Kill List, and it was quite good. It's intense. It is as intense as everybody has been telling me it was, and that there, like when it proper like when it properly just like zooms off in those last 30 minutes and that there, like Wheatley is astonishingly good at tension and like that slow burn of horror. My thing about it is I watched it with Lucy, who was watching it for a second time with me and Matt Bear. She said it worked better the second time when you weren't guessing where it went. I feel like this is probably going to be a thing with a lot of weekly songs about it, like how High Rise went from I'm not sure what happened here, but I think I liked it, to no, I got this completely and it was fantastic after a second viewing. So maybe it'll be the same thing here.
Killish definitely had that. It's funny you should mention it, because I was going to point out at some point that it definitely improved a lot on the second viewing for me. And I remember talking to Mike Shawcross about this, and he said it grew on him after the initial watch as well. Yeah. I think for a lot of people, you're right, it's definitely a grower.
I think
it's
all of Wheatley's films have been like that for me.
I'd say probably the exception of Free Fire, but of course Free Fire was designed to just be like an instant hit. But yeah, I get what you mean. Like, the thing about it for me is that as I was watching him out there, like, I'll get to the positive stuff in a minute and that there, and I'm going to try and do this. I don't know, because of course the problem is when you're trying to talk about Kill List is you kind of have to start alluding to the other stuff, which means if anybody hears and think, oh, I might want to give this a try, I'm out there, you can't help but go in with the kind of sense of I think the game's already been given away. But the sense is for me that when it hits the final half an hour, for me it's simultaneously not telegraphed enough and too telegraphed, if that makes sense. Like as I was watching it, like the intensity worked out there, but the switch in the final 30 minutes and that there kind of, it kind of comes out like it simultaneously been built up, but also at the same time feels a bit too distant from everything in the first like hour and that there, like the specific rooting in reality and that there that Wheatley had built, which I guess is also the point. And I'll gather as well that it probably is the point when I watch it again and that there. Mm-hmm. It's just the switch to a specific strand of 60s British horror that, or more specifically, one specific film in particular that I can't mention because it basically counts as a full-on spoiler. But it's simultaneous.
70s cult horror film are you referring to?
Yeah, from Britain and that there. It simultaneously feels a bit too like out of place and not built enough, specifically because much of the film is, of course, like seems to be using its thing as like an examination of PTSD, and then by the final third it turns out that the film's, at least on first watch, isn't really so much about anything as it is Wheatley wanting to make a full-on genre, like wanting to do a mashup genre exercise, and like showing off how much of an intense filmmaker he can be, which like works, because again, again, it works in the sense that it's a fantastic watch, like as it's happening about there, like the cast are all brilliant. I'm also very happy for once to see Michael Smiley not playing a villain of any kind.
When he's not playing a villain?
Yeah, or bad guy. Yes, I know he's a hitman and that there, but you know, as in like...
The antagonist, you mean?
Yeah.
He's not okay, I get you.
Yeah, you know, like, when he's just a lad...
I mean, he is a kind of assassin.
Yes, I know that, Owen.
Unless they're good people in Callum's world, I don't know. Maybe they could be good people.
And also a lot of that first third really does do a great job of like stifling down her middle class northern British life from out there, with a fantastic cast pulling together. And then when it's time to go hard on the intensity of drawing out the tension of sequences of like when Gal is wandering through the warehouse map there after Jay, who's after Jay and Matt there, all that kind of stuff. Wheatley is, again, he's just a phenomenal genre. If nothing else, Wheatley is a phenomenal visceral genre filmmaker. Even if, and I've noticed this as well in High Rise, and not so much Free Fire, because of course that's a deliberately contained thing about there, but he still kind of has an issue of endings. Which is something that Lucy, or my friend, had also mentioned about there, is that he kind of has a thing where, like genre filmmakers out there, of like I want to do this, and doesn't really seem to think through enough for the ending, if that makes sort of sense. My way, I've got that kind of way of like leaving things a bit too open or bleak and that there. Again, maybe this is something that works better on a second watch, and I'm looking forward to watching it on a second watch at some point. Obviously not too close to having seen it for the first time out there, but
I'd give it a break. I'd watch a couple of other films of his if you've not.
This now makes me, this now puts me at the halfway mark of seeing Wheatley films, by the way. Right. There's just Down Terrace, Sightseers, and A Field in England to Go, which is actually being given a cinema screening in Hull next month, late next month as well. Nice. Which I'll be trying to go to for that, because that that'll be fun, especially since there's a free screening as well. So it'll be a whole bunch of people going in having no idea what to expect. And apparently a field in England is mad.
It's fucking mental.
It's one of my favourite British films.
It's absolutely batshit.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that because, yeah, it's a kind of a while watching it because I was at the London Film Festival last year. I'm not sure if I've mentioned that enough times over the last year on this podcast here. But like whilst I was there, I ended up, for some reason, always getting sat near people who were really talking shit about Wheatley and that there, who were really upset that Free Fire was a closing film, that thing and that there, claiming that he's a very overrated guy that Film 4 trying to make happen and people don't want him out there, that he's not really a particularly interesting filmmaker or anything about that. It sounds like watching Killers is the kind of film where I can watch it and get it instantly and get like, yeah, Wheatley is a talent, but then also at the same time, I could sort of see where his detractors keep coming from. In a way, in that there, but if nothing else, it is a really intense watch. You did that great thing that like proper intense ones doing that there, where as the credits are rolling, I can sort of like feel my breath like finally leaving my body in that kind of way. Well, you know, after you watch like a sort of thriller out there that just leaves you gripped the whole way through, and it's not until after you start realizing I haven't breathed properly in the last 90 minutes, and now just all that tension is just slowly seeping out of me. That's good. I enjoyed Kill List out there. It wasn't really fun, but you know what I mean by that. And then straight after that, I watched Alien for the first time in a post Covenant world. So you know, gotta keep those, because I need to keep those nerves jangling. Apparently,
for the first time.
No, in a post Covenant world.
Oh, I see. Yeah, right.
In case you're wondering, that's why I hate Alien Covenant so much, is because Alien is one of my favorite films. I was not bullshitting on that anything in that bit.
Likewise, Alien is one of my favorite films, but I still.
About this either A, after I finally get my article about it written at some point, maybe, or B, for 7 hours on an end of year podcast.
Yeah, I would just want to very quickly, because I know we're running short of time again, but one of the things that, like, the first thing I ever saw of Ben Wheatley's was, I think he did the second and third series of Ideal, the sitcom that used to be on BBC Three. Have any of you guys seen it, with Johnny Vegas?
No, Manchester? But I do know, but I did find out, like, when I was looking through, that he was a director of The Wrong Door, that really, really bad BBC Three CGI sketch comedy series from 2008. Apparently, right, he wrote and directed all 6 episodes.
I don't even know what The Wrong Door is, but I can tell you that Ideal is very good. That was what made me sort of take notice of, like, one of those times where, you know, sitcom directors are just like, on BBC, it doesn't always matter who's directing, they're just functioning, they're playing a part in the whole thing. Yeah. Whereas Ideal, I was watching that, like, someone is really taken like artistic, creative control of this, and it was great. That's what kind of turned me on to it. I'd also say Down Terrace is great. It is a very low budget film, like almost like a homemade movie. But
I don't really have much of an issue with low budget movies and that there. So
but it's still good. It's still very funny.
Oh, and apparently also did an ABCs of Death segment as well.
Yep.
How was the ABCs of Death, actually? I've never actually watched it, but I heard mixed things.
Pretty crap, but they're a bit fun.
They're a mixed bag, obviously, because I suppose that's what they're supposed to be. But, like, I can't remember.
It says here, point of view of a vampire as he's chased down and staked by an angry mob.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right, with Neil Maskell. Yes.
Yeah, I didn't realise it was him until after I'd seen it.
What have you seen this week?
Coincidentally, given the George A. Romero news, but it wasn't planned, I watched this Saturday, I think. I watched Train to Busan for the first time.
Oh.
The Korean zombie film, which is set almost entirely on a train, which is traveling to Busan. But it's got a working father who's trying to drop off his young daughter at her mom's house for her birthday. Outbreak occurs, Korea goes to shit, and they try to survive the journey with other passengers. I thought it was great, and I was a bit worried going into it because I've heard so many people talking about, oh, it's really good, it's like one of the best Korean films like of the last decade, it's, you know, one of the best zombie films that you'll see for ages. And I was like, I don't like it when people hype films up to that extent, But it was good. It was really good, in fact. And I know, Steve, did you watch Train to Busan last year?
Yes, I did.
Did you like it? I can't remember what your opinion was.
I did like it. Yeah, I thought it was very good.
It was very, yeah.
Very fast-paced and exciting and a little bit different, yeah.
Because it's got Korean melodrama in it as well.
Tons of it, yeah. In fact, I asked Elisa what she thought of it, and she's like, oh, it's really sad. I was like, well, it's Korean. You know, at some point, some child is going to cry and the parents are going to cry over them. But, I thought it was really good as well. There's it's the director, Gong Yoo. I've only seen one of his films. I don't think he's made very many, but it's The King of Pigs. No, Gong Yoo, sorry, was the actor who's the dad. Yeon Sang-ho was the director, directed King of Pigs, which was an animated feature about a kid who gets bullied and was really viciously, traumatizingly emotional and just like, you know, horrible, really.
Well, with a recommendation like that, Owen.
I know, but like, I wouldn't say it was a great movie. It's certainly nothing like Train to Busan, because I think Train to Busan's got a bit of humour about it, at least.
Oh, it's got a lot of humour in it.
Yeah,
but...
I'd argue probably a bit too much for my liking, but...
I don't know. I quite like I've got his name here as well. Ma Dong-suk, the expectant father. He sort of takes on the role a little bit of, like, protecting them all. He's great, but I mean, he's great in most things. If you've seen Kundo, Age of the Rampant, then you'll recognise him. But he's great in that. He's great in this. A really built guy. But great comic timing, I thought. So, he was great. Really interesting character. Essentially, it is an out-and-out zombie film. And we don't really get many that aren't either really just like stoically stern and just a bit too serious and you know, up themselves a little bit, or you get the complete opposite where it's like, hey, aren't zombies really weird, let's make some old people fight some zombies, or you know, just try and turn it into a comedy. And it's like, well, both cases.
Did you not like Cockneys versus zombies, Owen?
I didn't find Cockneys.
What about pro wrestlers versus zombies, Owen? If you like that,
the wrestling Demon King or something. Anyway, I don't know what that one was. That was shit. That was wrestlers versus zombies. But the
triangle in it.
Oh right, no,
you,
don't
you
think
never I... watched. Oh, you, Steve, I've got the film you can give Owen next time.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it already.
Yeah, but what I loved about Train to Busan, it is just a zombie film, but it's got the right blend of everything that a zombie film should. I mean, you can read into it all the stuff about, well, the collapse of society and careers, about, you know, extravagance and how reaching for the capitalism is just gonna turn in on itself, blah blah. But actually, you don't need to look for any of that. You don't need to look for homages, because I mean, actually, to be fair, there aren't all that many homages that I spotted. I think it was trying to be very original. And, you know, it worked. It wasn't the Romero zombies. They're not the classic slow shuffling zombies. They are the speedier variety. But they make it work really well. And in funnily enough, mentioning World War Z earlier, that's what it reminded me of a little bit. You know, when you see all the zombies just piling up on top of each other and they try and wedge themselves through spaces. And I just thought graphically... it looked great because there are lots of extras, obviously, but it was surprisingly well.
I think also because there's actual weight to those, whereas ones in World War Z are just kind of
ragdoll kind of.
Yeah, it's like the orc hordes in the Hobbit movies. And that, you know, it's just like there's no weight to anything in that. They're just clearly. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I get, I think part of it, because I saw it last Halloween, on Halloween, that's what I watched on Halloween instead of Kill List, in a cinema, no less. Well, I think part of it's just that hype that everybody did of, this is the best zombie movie in years, and or maybe it's just general burnout I have of zombies, because I'm really fucking sick of zombies, you guys. I don't know, it's that thing of, I watched it, I'm like, this is fine. And not really much else. Although, I think my main issue of that is that there's not too much, is I didn't find much tension in it. Like, it's good on, like, thrills and intensity out there. But apart from the bit where they're sneaking through in the tunnel, I didn't really feel much, like, tension to it out there. It was just kind of a good hangout time, which is fine. It's fine.
I think there was enough tension. I don't think that's what they would necessarily.
Yeah, no. That's what I mean. Like what it is. I can sit here and recognize this is a fine film. This is a great example for form. I honestly think I'm just sick of zombies, to be honest. Especially since for the most part they don't seem to be going away.
Yeah.
Like actual zombies, come to think of it. But
that's what I mean. When they do something slightly different with them, then I'm all for it. You know, if they take the premise and do something interesting, great. It's the ones that just like being that are completely unaware of the point of zombies and just think, oh, they're creepy because they're undead things. It's like, well, no, there's more to them as creatures than just, oh, it's the next door neighbor's crawled out of the grave. I buried him in the garden.
Do you basically mean the Call of Duty DLC pack? Zombies as aesthetics rather than zombies as
exactly.
Meaning
thank
anything.
You. That's what I mean.
Yeah, zombies for the sake of zombies.
Precisely. When they could be absolutely any kind of monster at all.
Okay. Brooker, what have you seen this week?
So talking about horror movies.
Hey. Wait, segues.
This is almost too well oiled.
I know, it's almost like we planned it. So yeah, I finally got to watch The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which I've been dying to watch for fucking ages. And I think I've owned the DVD for a month, and it's been just sat on my shelf waiting for me to find time and energy to watch it. But yeah, so I finally stuck it in over the weekend. It's a supernatural horror film, and I'm going to cannibalize this guy's name. Andre Ovredal? I don't know.
Just we'll have that thing.
Yeah, you could just say the Troll Hunter guy.
Yeah, the guy that made Troll Hunter. I wasn't sure what to expect, to be honest. You know, a proper supernatural horror film from the guy that made Trollhunter was bizarre. I wasn't sure how it was going to be. It's so there's in like small town in the arse end of anywhere America, a body's kind of half buried in a basement, and police pull her out and can see nothing wrong with her. No identifying features, the fingerprints, dental records, what have you, nothing on record. Hence Jane Doe. Take her off to a small town coroner's office where Brian Cox and his son Emil Hirsch.
Yeah.
Go to work to try and figure out what killed her now, trying to figure out her cause of death, not necessarily what killed her. It starts off for about 15, 20 minutes. You watch them slowly do this autopsy. And if you're like me and you've spent far too many hours watching House reruns on Sky Atlantic, and they start rolling off all these medical terms, you go, oh, maybe it's this, oh, it's going to be that, you've got no fucking idea what happened to this woman. You think you're clever, you think you can figure it out, you've got no idea. But all of a sudden this really creepy shit starts happening, and when I say creepy, I mean like edge of the seat, nail biting. Literally nail biting as well. I sat there, found myself chewing on my thumbnail while I was watching this film. Creepy shit happening to these guys and to the office around them. A bit like Callum talking about Kill List. You can't talk too much about what really happens, because to do that would be to give away the reveal. And while I think the reveal could have happened maybe 10 minutes earlier, it feels like it was stretched out just a little bit. You know, an 87-minute movie, would have been quite happy with an 80-minute movie. Shorten it down a little bit. When the reveal happens, I have to admit, I didn't see it coming. I sat there wide-eyed going, holy fucking shit. I cannot believe that I didn't figure that out. It was absolutely mental. But the genius of this film is that it is so creepy and so atmospheric. But it does it with stuff that you've seen a million times before, if you watch horror movies. So you kind of get, you know, people looking out of doors to investigate a noise, and something pops up in front of you. Weird noises in rooms that there was nobody in a minute ago, and doors creaking open, all kinds of really tropey shit. But it's done so well, and some of it, maybe you do, maybe you don't. We normally get kind of those scares in really good horror films that leave you just cold. You crapped yourself so much watching them. You just went, holy fuck, I need to get up and have a cigarette or a cup of coffee or something. I need to get away from the screen. I counted two of those in the hour and a half this film was on. And, you know, I'm not a, well, I'm big hard man. I don't scare that easy when it comes to horror films anymore. Mainly because I've seen it all before a million times.
And you've seen it all done terribly.
I've seen it all done. Yeah, for everything from absolute dog shit to really, really well. Autopsy of Jane Doe, for sure, sits in the really, really well category. Probably not the best horror I've ever seen, but certainly so far this year, the best horror I've seen so far this year. It's fucking brilliant.
And it's been a quite good year for horror as
well. It has. I mean, we were talking about it earlier on. It's pipped The Void. The Void was one of the best ones, or still is one of the best ones I saw this year. I think Autopsy of Jane Doe is better than The Void. The only difference is, I suppose, Void, I can still stick on the Bell Critics Awards at the end of the year. Jane Doe, I can't.
Why? Is it because Jane Doe was technically released last year and you work like me in this instance?
Well, it hasn't really been given a proper theatrical release at all.
It got a one-night-only event screening special before being dumped to DVD.
It did, which really fucking annoyed me because I was dying to get tickets for it because the guy that runs Fright Fest was interviewing the director down there as well. And I desperately wanted to get down there. And I had the time to get down there. I had the money to get down there. By the time I was able to get home and get onto the website to get tickets, they'd all fucking gone. I was distraught.
Oh.
So don't mess with horror fans when you're trying to get tickets for fucking anything. They're lethal.
They are on your shit.
They really are.
This week's main new release for us to review is the latest in the Planet of the Apes rebooted series, War for the Battle of the Planet of the Apes, where Andy
War for the Battle of the Planet of the Apes.
War for the Battle of the Dawn and Provides the Fall of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Monkey Fight.
Versus King Kong. Living Planet of the Apes. That's the one.
Anyway, Andy Serkis returns as Caesar from the previous films and now being hunted once more by the humans looking to wipe them out. Before we go into reviewing this film, I think it's fair to say that as far as kind of these summer blockbuster type films have gone, this has really, you know, this series has really nailed it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's elevated it above the shitty, shallow blockbuster fare that we've been forced to endure for a long time.
Yeah.
What Transformers. Guys, what?
Yeah.
I was thinking Pirates of the Caribbean, but that's
just insert any shitty franchise. But like, especially since, of course, in theory, when this started out, there was really no reason to believe this was going to be any good.
It was just another remake, and you're kind of thinking, why do we need another Planet of the Apes series?
And then from about like 30, 40 minutes of Rise, this is why we needed it right there, because of the fantastic character work, the outstanding special effects by Weta, and the fact that after it stopped, you know, doing cutesy callbacks and that there, it started blazing its own path and that there. Like, I will always remember the moment Caesar speaks in Rise to be one of my favorite cinema moments that I've ever had the experience of being in there, because, you know, obviously it leads up with that really cheesy, you know, reference to the most famous line of the original Planet of the Apes and that there. Yeah. But even then, like before, you know, you get that thing where people just keep talking to someone about there. And then the second that, like, that bit happens, everybody just dead silent. Like that's one of my favorite moments in cinema. So that way, just like, you genuinely, nobody saw it coming, and you can just sit there and just be enwrapped by like the power of cinema. And
I mean, the film, the way the films are done, you don't mind the callbacks in the end. Yeah.
No, especially not as they've gotten further and further on as well. They've done better at that. And I can't believe I'm saying this as well, is that, like, and Dawn was a huge step up from Rise, I feel. Yeah. I feel like Dawn was one of the best films of 2014, whilst at the same time being criminally underrated, because 2014 was that kind of year. I feel like, as great as the series is, it's still not one that really gets its due outside of the inevitable every 2 or 3 years Andy Serkis should get an Oscar conversations back. Mm-hmm. These are fantastic films that have actually sort of grown in aims and ambitions from the first one. The first one kind of felt like initially like it was going to be franchise management, instead just turned into like a really entertaining like small scale character story. The second one ended up being a very timely and relevant anti-gun polemic as well, which, you know, about race relations out there. And now you've got a third one that is a full-on no holds barred anti-war movie in which a bunch of apes try and avoid being persecuted by effectively neo-Nazi Puritan race skinheads led by a colonel who is like one part Donald Trump and one part Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. Mm-hmm. So like they've gotten bigger. They've gotten, and what helps what is that they've actually got the skill and the passion to be able to pull off these higher aims as well. I'm just going to spoil it right now for my views on it. I love War for the Planet of the Apes. If it doesn't, for me, I'm not sure if it quite equals or betters Dawn. For one thing, it feels a bit too long by the time the second act's coming to an end. But it's close, which automatically makes it one of the best films of the year for me. And it builds up to one heck of an ending as well. It's
a great ending, isn't it? I mean, they don't go to the stupid lengths of other blockbusters of like, oh, we have the big explosion ending. There is a big climactic scene, but it's not done in that just really broad and mindless way. There's purpose to what's going on. And I loved how it was just like, it brought everything to a close. And
my favorite bit
is, I mean, like, I don't want to talk about it, but
yeah, like my favorite bit is like the framing of the ending as well. Because of course, the way they've sold it, it's in the titles and the posters and all that. In the same way, but like Dawn kind of advertised itself as, come watch apes on horseback and machine guns fight humans. It's going to be awesome. And Ben made that utterly heartbreaking and miserable and soul destroying in actual context. Here's a film that like sells itself of like war and isn't actually a war movie. It's instead a revenge western focused specifically around a very select few like people on that there. So she said, but when the film does finally hit its big action scenes, there are only two in the entire film, really, like two proper big action scenes. Mm-hmm. The actual war is happening in the background, and in the foreground, we're getting the conclusion. In the foreground, the one we're actually paying attention to is just the conclusion for various character arcs. Because who really gives a damn about the war? The war is a hollow, pointless, miserable thing. Instead, we're here for these specific characters as well on that there. I just love that. Matt Reeves is outstanding as a director. He really is.
Callum, you mentioned earlier in this chat about Andy Serkis and Oscar talk for his roles in this film. Do we think, all of us between us think that's a possibility? I mean, it's a very different discipline what he's doing to what you would traditionally see people nominated for, the whole motion capture thing. But he does it so well, and in this, it's brilliant because he actually makes you tear up about a CGI monkey.
There was a specific scene in this movie where you can see the exact point where his character goes from complete, like from like fear to total loss to absolute rage, and it's terrifying. And I'm one of those people who has been arguing for years that like voice actors and that they deserve best actor, best actress nominees and that there, like everybody else does and that. Because voice acting is acting. It's really hard. What Andy Serkis also does is really hard and is no less like valid for the fact that it involves a lot of computers helping out as well. There's no way he's going to get nominated. Of course he isn't. But he should be, because he's fantastic here. Especially since, as well, because much of the film, I've seen some people try and dismiss him as just having to just do grimacing, but a lot of the contact, like, but a lot of the like emotional dynamics and out there of his character from previous films and out there has been flushed out in favor of the kind of like grimacing Western anti-hero. I don't think that's the case. I just think he's gotten really good at being very subtle about being even more subtle about it as well.
I saw either an interview with Andy Serkis himself or people who work on the film and do the same kind of thing that he's been doing, you know, motion capture, playing the apes, and they've all been doing it through the three films kind of as a little group of them. And they were saying that, you know, over the three films, they've had to kind of evolve how they play the apes and all the movements and the body language and everything. So when it starts off in the first film, it's kind of very, really kind of, this is a really bad way of putting it, but really like monkey-like and ape-like. And then as it goes on, they evolve because, you know, they become more upright, evolved creatures, they become more intelligent and everything. So they've got to add that to how they're playing it in the movements and everything and the facial expressions and the whole lot.
he's very regal in this. As I was watching the film, yes. The word to is regal because he looks king-like. You know, all the apes look like, you know, they're more upright. They're walking on 2 feet more than just like how they used to and stuff. And when he gets more savage, when he gets into like the angry mode, then you see him like running like a chimpanzee runs, you know, knuckles on the floor and stuff. But most of the time, he is the one whose back is straight. His posture is like a princely kind of character.
Which works.
But yeah, he's more so than the others, and it just, he stands out anyway because he looks different, but he also stands out because of the way that Serkis portrays him and how he carries himself through the film.
And that's also important as well, because much of the film's conflict about it is based on like competing cults of personality in a way, like with him and Woody Harrelson's general, both effectively being like
the doubles,
like being adored godlike leaders with followers who are essentially willing to stand by. But of course, the difference being that the people who are adored leaders and use their like that adoration for good, for the betterment of others, and those who do it for selfish, hate-fueled reasons, and that as well, Matt, there, and seeing the dynamic play out between the two, and just it's like how Harrelson is captivating as well in just such an utterly repellent role as well. Like Rob, but you kind of sit there with like there is a monologue in the middle. Again, I'm trying very hard to spoil that here because how the film like turns and that there in its second half is just amazing to watch. Where he gets that Jewish remark, and it seems like it's about to come to the point where, you know, where you get that murky thing of, maybe both sides of a point in that there. But both his delivery and the exact way that the thing's pitched is that any kind of pity and sympathy you might have just kind of disappears at a certain point. Just see how far down he's kind of pushed his anti-intellectualism, like speciesist purity lines and that there. Such a show, just that mad delusion in his head. And he does phenomenal work. I mean, everybody in this film as well. Can we also quickly talk about how great Steve Zahn is as well as Bad Ape?
Bad Ape was brilliant. And I mean, I think it's very easy in a film like this, which has got quite a serious tone, even though it is like bleak. Sorry?
It's bleak. I was just saying it's bleak over and over again.
But it's very easy for comic relief in a film like this to really go tits up and to grate against the tone of the film and just be like, this doesn't work at all, and take you out of the film. But didn't in this case. It was really well done. And he stole every scene he was in.
Yeah, mainly because like the comedy isn't really so much comedy as it's just extra sad. The entire it's comic relief that fits the character instead of comic relief that's just clearly there to try and lighten the mood.
I've got some roller skates. I'm gonna skate in front of the screen and do a cartwheel.
Yeah,
it's not goofy monkey.
Yeah,
behavior, is it? No, it's not.
It's that sense of just watching all the horrors there, in such a sense that it's kind of. There is a sort of humor in there, but mostly it's just like really heartbreaking in a way as well, which is kind of the whole film. Like that whole film is essentially built to withhold any traditional catharsis in a way that, like as I mentioned to Yop before we started recording here, where it reminds me a lot like Logan, and not just because the story structure of that film is very, very similar to Logan, as it turns out, by complete coincidence.
Very similar to a lot of films. I was, the first time I was watching this, I've seen it twice in the cinema. First time I watched it in 3D, second time in 2D. And I was watching it and thinking, what is this? I've seen this before. What is this? And then it got to a point in the film where you see Apocalypse as like graffiti, you know. It's fucking Apocalypse Now, that's what it is. And then the second time I watched it from the very beginning, it's like, yeah, that's Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
That's Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
That's
and,
Apocalypse
Now. And there's even
the
a shot
beginning
near...
and the end. And I know that's a reference to Beneath the Planet of the Apes and stuff. But everything from like Woody Harrelson shaving his head.
And there's also that final climax scene as well that basically just stops being a homage to Apocalypse Now and basically just turns into
just
a
straight up. Apocalypse. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But Brooke, I know that we've chatted previously about Woody Harrelson, because it takes an awfully good film for me to like Woody Harrelson.
Oh,
yeah, I'm not a big fan. But we chatted about him did we do it on the live podcast or did we just do it one time when we met up? And I was talking about Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, we were talking about Natural Born Killers. That might have been the live one.
I think so. But so you like him generally?
I'm a big fan of Woody Harrelson's. More so over the last 5 or 10 years, he's done a lot of really good stuff. Even like shit like Hunger Games, I liked him in. And
great in Hunger Games.
Yeah, I thought he was...
lay off for Hunger Games.
Did you get on with Triple Nine?
Oh, okay, no.
That you're just playing unfair here, are we?
Yeah. You're playing with loaded dice, really, bringing up Triple Nine. That's unfair. But, like, did you see Rampart?
No,
I didn't. But I've heard it's great.
It's really good, and he is fucking amazing. And he's done that, you know, the whole losing weight to fit his character thing, and he looks ill, and he puts in a hell of a fucking performance. He is outstanding in Rampart. I've got a lot of time for Woody Harrelson. And I thought he was...
Watch The Edge of 17 if you haven't already.
I haven't seen The Edge of 17. The title sounds like it shouldn't be my thing.
I mean, you should watch it anyway because it's fantastic, but also he's actually really good in there as well. In what's like otherwise a relative... What could have been a stereotypical role, he makes it work.
Okay.
I was going to say, I brought it up just because he's effectively the only human character... who has more than, you know, a handful of lines or glances at things, you know. He actually gets to develop and stuff.
But he is playing Marlon Brando, though, isn't he?
But he is just Brando, isn't he?
I don't mean that in a bad way, though. I think he does it really well.
Yeah, I was going to say...
you both between Duvall and Brando, two of them together.
I was going to say, you're both making it sound as if, like, Woody Harrelson being Marlon Brando is a bad thing.
No, it's really not.
No, it works.
It works really well.
Brooker,
yes, mate.
We've been speaking about the film for a while, but you've not told us too much what you think about it. So what do you think about the film?
No, I really liked it. I think it done a thing where, from the first one, so we'll call the first one was Rise.
Yeah, Rise.
Rise.
Right. The names are completely wrong, right?
It's fucking backwards. It drives me up the wall.
The first one should be Door, and then we should have War.
Clearly, this was all done just so they could do that opening title scroll. Okay, the opening title. That's clearly the sole reason they did this. So don't begrudge them for that. No. I liked that.
But even that was quite good. The opening, the bit, because you know you don't even have had to have seen the other two films. Now you can just go straight in and see that.
But it helps
where you are.
It helps if you've seen it for that added
weight.
Definitely
should watch the other.
Yeah.
But anyway, Brooker, sorry.
That's all right.
When you were trying to talk.
No, that's fine. So the first one...
Basically, we just asked Brooker for his opinion and then talked over him.
That's all right. So the first one done this really cool thing where I expected... You guys said it earlier. I expected it to be absolute shite. It was 10 years after the fucking Marky Mark one. I thought it was going to be god-awful.
Marky Mark.
And it turned out it was fucking brilliant.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, obviously, 3 years later, the Dawn came out and completely upped the stakes throughout the entire thing, which I thought was really cool, really brave, because I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was. I just thought it was going to be a bit of a crappy cash-in sequel. I've seen the original Planet of the Apes films. Mm. They're all crappy cash-in sequels. I don't like any of them after the first one. I think they're all shit.
You're breaking people's hearts here.
I know.
Yeah, there are some good films in that series.
No, I really, really don't like them. The first one I think is great, but after that I think they're just boring.
Well, also none of them have James Franco in it.
Well, this is true.
or
Jason Clarke. And I'm a big Jason Clarke fan as well.
Who?
You
mean Jai Courtney, right? No, sorry. You mean Sam Worthington. You meant Sam Worthington.
The thing I was worried about with this one, we've all seen the trailers and we've all seen it's called War for the Planet of the Apes. But what it really needed to do was what Terminator refused to do after Terminator 2, and that was properly escalate it to a proper war film. So after Terminator 2, we got Wank Terminator 3. And I honestly was expecting Wank Apes 3. I really thought it was going to suck.
You can find awful. That on certain websites.
You can. Yeah. I own it.
Wank Apes 3.
But no, it blew me away. Absolutely blew me away. I thought it was fucking brilliant. I didn't go with Apocalypse Now when I watched it. I watched the beginning bit going, this is Hamburger Hill. This looks like Hamburger Hill. But
Vietnam combat movie, isn't
this
it?
This is it. I'm pretty sure, apart from maybe Full Metal Jacket, you could swap out half of that film and add in any of your favourite Vietnam War movies, yeah, and it would still work.
Well, for the first half, and then it turns into a Holocaust drama.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, in a way. That
was, but even then, it's still kind of similar to Apocalypse.
Oh, no. Yeah.
I mean, there's no getting away from it. The second half of the film is absolutely Apocalypse Now. There's no getting away from that at all.
The first half is a lot of that is Apocalypse Now as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. There's a lot you can swap out in the first film, though. In the first half, sorry. You can take the first half of the film, and like I say, there's a lot of Vietnam War films you can plug into that, and it still works.
And you know, if it wasn't for the Apocalypse graffiti as well, I would have assumed it was kind of ripping it off, like rather than homaging it.
My favourite thing so far about that is, I think it was the World of Blackout review. He said the only reason that's been put there is to make journalists put their minds to thinking about a better tagline.
Work on their subheadings.
Which did make me laugh.
I mean, is that, but also I just like to imagine that we humans really are just that uncreative when it comes to making our apocalypse graffiti.
I haven't seen any really creative graffiti for a long time. That'd probably be...
Yeah, exactly. So, I feel like it's interesting, Booker, actually, you mentioned that you feel like it goes bigger, because I actually feel it goes smaller in a way. Like, again, from that sense of it could have just been a movie about, you know, of flinging apes and humans sat together in a big giant scales CGI blockbuster map there, and instead is actually, again, outside of, and actually was at the beginning, and one that properly incites a plot, and then one at the very end of that there, it's really not actually an action movie. It's a very slow moving character drama. It goes small, it goes insular, which not coincidentally,
but it's bookended by two very big warlike set pieces.
Yeah. I remember as a way of, it's actually quite reflective of what have been a lot of my favourite blockbuster sequels in recent years, like, say, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, or, I guess, like, in a way, like, T2 out there, which purposely, instead of going bigger, wider, stayed small and focused on characters and that there, like, stayed insular, to such extent that they didn't lose control of the plot, like, of the plot, of the heart, of the themes and that there, and that small scale allowed them to actually push forward and stick directly to their guns, especially since, again, the way that war as well, now that every time that violence happens, it's this horrifying, like, sickening thing where nobody wins, and it's just painful to watch. And the only time that any catharsis does arrive in the film comes from the act of surviving, not from somebody doing anything violent, but just from the mere act of surviving. And it's this beautiful, heart-wrenching, like, release. That's where the beauty comes from. So it recognizes, in a way, it feels kind of a piece of arrival. You ever did either a new film from last year as well, like how that was a film that witnessed humanity walking up to the edge of conflict and then stepping back and finding beauty in that stepping back, whereas here it's humanity stepping up to the edge of conflict, pushing forward into it, and then trying to find the moments of beauty inside of that, absolute hell, without shortchanging the fact that everything is awful and miserable, and there are no winners to any of this.
I was going to say, was I the only person who was looking forward to Rise? Because from everyone else has said, you were expecting it to be shit, and I was so excited for Rise of the Planet.
I don't know. I didn't think it necessarily be shit. I didn't necessarily look forward to it. I just remember thinking, why? Like when any of these films, we're now on to the third reboot of Spider-Man, and all right, the Tom Holland one, reasonably excited about because of how good he was in Civil War, but the Andrew Garfield one, you're thinking, why?
Yeah.
And when they're kind of, even though it is in the same series, they're rebooting Transformers with the fourth one with Marky Mark, and, you know, you're thinking, why? That was just it. And I've obviously been proved very wrong with the Planet of the Apes series.
Well, as have we all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My trepidation towards Rise was the fact that when Rise came out, the trailers appeared to give away the entire film from start to finish in the space of 2 and a bit minutes. And if it weren't for the giant critical acclaim it received, I was pretty simply like, okay, great, I don't need to watch this film then. Thank you, Fox. Mm. Thank you for spoiling your fucking movie. But I'm glad I watched it, especially as well, they mostly didn't show that second act, which is what sold me on the whole film entirely, like the entire bit when Caesar, you know, like was in the camp. Yeah. Yeah, in the zoo. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Okay. I really looked forward to Rise. I was massively pleased with how it turned out as well.
I was looking forward to Rise. I just thought it was going to be a bit crap.
Okay, fair enough. So the other thing I wanted to touch on without actually revealing the end of this movie. So we've basically now had Escape from the Planet of the Apes as Rise of the Planet of the Apes. We've had Conquest as Dawn. Kind of had Battle for as War of, or War for the Planet of the Apes. So next film, I'm guessing, is going to be Planet of the Apes, and then we'll have a fifth and final film, which will be Beneath Planet of the Apes. Is that what we're thinking now? Is that where they're going to go?
I don't know. I mean, like Callum said earlier, this film brings together the trilogy quite nicely without giving away any spoilers. It brings the main characters' arcs to a very nice and satisfied, satisfactory conclusion. But you don't go and make a new Planet of the Apes franchise and don't make Planet of the Apes.
It's coming. It's next, or is it coming further down the line, though?
From the business side of things, though, it's not doing very well.
Well, that's just the problem of it having been released in middle of fucking July when every single week is having a new film out every week. That's not really so much a film's fault.
No, it's not the film's fault at all. You and I both know this, but the problem is studios go, cost us 150 mil to make. Made 80 mil, we're not doing another one of those.
It was cheaper than the last one, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Fox have been, I know for a fact that Fox were pre-screening this like a month in advance. So clearly they have faith in this series, if nothing else, I think. I'm hopeful if they do make another one. I don't, by the way, for record here, I kind of don't want them to make another one because this is like a kind of a perfect end note to what has been one of the best trilogies, if not of this century, but maybe even just of all time, really. Like it's, which I mean, you can say for basically any trilogy that doesn't whiff it on the third one. If they do make another one, I think they will, and it will probably be Planet of the Apes, especially since they know for a fact now that they can just go all in on doing Planet of the Apes next.
I don't know where they could go with the story between here and Planet of the Apes.
I don't know either. I kind of don't want them to, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did next. And I just
couldn't see where you'd go again. You're just going to be doing a rehash of War or Dawn. It's just going to be
the same thing again.
Yeah,
wouldn't you?
It's just going to be humans trying to kill the apes because they're the last remaining humans, and things are bleak for them. And that's the only thing.
With this the disease that's spreading now around humans and making them into the kind of primal creatures that we see in the original Planet of the Apes film. Yeah.
I think you've got to probably move on at least 100 years in time for it to work. People to evolve and devolve as to what this.
In Rise of the Planet of the Apes, we did see the newspaper headline right about the
TV footage of the rocket launch of the Icarus
going to Mars. Right, so we would be within a generation, maybe more.
I mean, I guess as that, but also, of course, kind of the point of Planet of the Apes, I feel like that is that there's that shock of you don't really get like all the backstory that we've had in that. It's that kind of outsider's perspective here. Is that the only way you can do that is just kind of to get to that point, then is to kind of have to negate a lot of what this series specifically has been doing with the apes.
Sure.
Which I think admittedly could be interesting if it was worked well, but that would require doing more movies and just jumping straight into Planet of the Apes. It's kind of why I don't want them to do another one, to just leave this as is, especially since, again, the way that it comes near to the end is actually quite a beautiful, like, humanist message in the end out there that cuts through all darkness. Because, again, it's a bleak film, but not a nihilistic or cynical film out there. Like, it's a real difficult thing with your dark, serious, moody, angsty movies. But rather, if they are gonna bring it back though, I kind of honestly just trust. I'd like them to bring Matt Reeves back. He co-wrote War, by the way, after having just directed Dawn.
Yeah,
and I feel, and between this, like his work on this and Cloverfield, I think he genuinely can actually pull this forward.
He's gonna be too busy making DC movies from now on, isn't he?
Yeah, he's gonna do the Batman. Which, if that's fair play to, again, I think he's probably the only person I would fully trust, like, as a name to make me think of, yeah, we can keep doing this. Otherwise, I prefer this to be where it ends. But if they do make another one solid, I'll be there anyway, because Christ, again, there was a time when some of us thought this wasn't going to be any good anyway. So
yeah.
why not give them the benefit of the doubt?
Just to bring this to an end, we've gone all this way, we've not mentioned the Planet of the Apes musical.
do you hate every ape you see, Steve?
I do.
Chimpanzee.
That is just hilarious on every level.
We apparently could not escape this podcast without the obligatory Simpsons reference. Yeah. Great.
No.
Okay, so that's it.
Dr. Zeus. Sorry, carry on.
Just like it when his agent phones him up and says, "Have you heard of Planet of the Apes, the planet or the movie?"
Shall we do some recommendations then?
Yes.
Technically, Owen doesn't need to do any since he's already come up with 100 for the website.
Well, that is literally what I was going to do as my recommendation.
Sorry. Well,
shall we just do that as everyone's recommendation so we can all go to bed?
I mean, good idea, but also it's a genuinely good read for a record.
Yeah. So Owen has picked the 100 best films on Netflix, which is a fantastic article on the Failed Critics website.
Took 3 days. 3 days of spreadsheets, of ratings, of coming up with small reviews for all of them.
Student life. You've got way too much time on your hands, dude.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep the list updated as time goes by, perchance?
No, I'm not. Oh. But I'm going to endeavour to do ones for Amazon Prime, for Shudder, for Netflix originals, maybe, TV shows. And I would like input from people on the other ones.
Good.
Because it's more fun that way.
Does anyone else want to recommend anything while we're at it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only because of what we talked about earlier on, Night of the Living Dead and The Crazies are both on Shudder.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to go with, because I'm determined to get Owen to watch it, there's some new episodes of Z Nation gone onto Netflix, Owen.
I love that mischief, like that gleeful little imp Brooker just did.
I love G Nation.
I am gonna go with because it was just added to Netflix today. Minions, which is better than anybody who actually bothers to say it is, especially in comparison to Despicable Me 3, which is mostly just a tired, miserable waste of space. Watch it when you're not being drowned by marketing for a Despicable Me movie. You will actually see that Minions is actually quite imaginative and a lot of fun. So there.
Excellent. So yes, that's it for this week's Failed Critics podcast. Next week, Owen, we are joined by
people for our stuff.
And
I'm back apparently.
Yes. You are back. What are we talking about? Dunkirk, is it next week?
Dunkirk. Yeah, Dunkirk. Yeah, looking forward to that one, yeah.
And Captain Underpants. No, but no, please somebody care about DreamWorks. They might not be around much longer.
I actually saw the trailer for that and thought it didn't look too bad. When I saw the poster and stuff, I thought that's going to be fucking awful. And the trailer made me laugh a couple of times.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I mean, it's based on the I liked the Captain Underpants books when I was younger. So
yeah.
I mean, problem is, it's just being sent out to die. Like Fox are murdering this thing.
Yeah, you can't send something like that out on Dunkirk release week.
Exactly.
Oh no! It came out. It also came out a month ago in America to deafening silence.
Well, yeah. When Wonder Woman came out.
Yep. Same week and everything. I get that this is the last in Fox's deal with DreamWorks, but at the same time, this is a fucking murder. It's. Like you could try that in courts and people would convict 20th Century Fox of murder here. It's unconscionable. Or maybe it's crap. We'll find out next week.
I need to go because I need to probably put some ice on my ankle, have a shower, have some food and watch Game of Thrones.
Good as excuses we've ever had.
Yeah.
Critics Podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, with contributions from different guests every week, with original music provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com from the track The Bandit, remixed by James Yule, who you can find at jamesyule.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Failed Critics, on iTunes and all good podcast apps, or you can check us out at failedcritics.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And why not check out our sister podcasts, Character Unlock and and Field & Mullinger's Underground Nights from the Failed Media Network of Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.